Hello, Knox here. Welcome to our free feed for our podcast, Shelf Respect. As a happy introduction to what we've been doing for 6 months over on Patreon, we wanted to share one of our exclusive hardback episodes, The Nose of Fiction.
This episode can give you a feel for the three of us, our vibes, and what we're doing in our closed door scenes in our paid community. This episode was originally published in October of 2025.
To hear more episodes like this and hardback bangers like Shelf Reflection series, where we talk about what we've been reading, Building a Literary Villain, Odd Reader Out, where Aaron and I explain fan fiction to Knox in a way that he fully understood, our 2025 book superlatives, plus almost a dozen more episodes, and we're always adding monthly. Become a hardback at patreon.com/shelfreflection. The link is in the show notes. And now to the episode.
Hello, welcome to Shelf Respect, the book podcast focused on both the craft and chaos of fiction. I'm Knox McCoy, and joining me as always, two people describing nipples as being pebbled. It's Jamie Golden and Aaron Moon.
But when they pebble, that's how he knows that it's.
I'd never heard that word. And then I saw it in so many of our comments. And I was like, this is a part of the world I
didn't
gotta
need to know. You got to stop pebbling those nipples.
You got to stop pebbling them.
Yeah. In this episode, we will be talking through The Nose of Fiction, as mentioned by you, our wonderful supporters.
Now, if you're listening, then you are supporting our small biz. Listen, you are the Magnus to our Alec, the Katniss to our PETA, and the Hermione to our Draco. It's sexier. Trust me. It's better than Ron. We promise.
Okay. I'm excited to do The Nose of Fiction. I think it's been something we've kind of, I don't know if we actually did an episode on the podcast about The Nose of Fiction, but it's felt like something that was warranting a conversation, but we didn't know if it like fit over on the general pop culture side. So I think we're excited to do here. And judging off the comments that we got, it was the right choice because so many of you had submissions and opinions for us to talk through. There were so many more we wanted to use, but we're trying not to do like a 3-hour episode. So we had to winnow it down. So,
and I like doing it here because with readers, you can get real niche in your complaints. Like you can be really specific. Whereas I think in a general pop culture way, people are like, oh, do books have that? I don't know. I read magazines and it's like, okay, well, this is not helpful. But I think in here, we can be really weird.
Yeah. So why don't we start, before we actually get to the comments, let's do some, kick it off with a personal no fiction. Jamie, you want to hit us with your first one?
Yes. Mine is, of course, and I feel very passionately about this, is when a virginal heroine who has sex for the first time in the book, on page, we see it, open door. And it is the best sex she's ever had. Let me explain how first time.
Well, technically it is because it's first sex he's ever had. So it's the best.
That's only true for men. That's not true for women.
No, I mean, it's both the best and the worst because it's the only sex she's had. Right.
That's true. Fair.
Yeah. But the defense rests, Your Honor.
But it's
that's it.
But it's the best, but it's still bad.
Yeah. Now, the next time she has sex, it's definitely the worst.
Listen, the way writers write it is writers are like, oh, it's a pinch. Is a pinch. And it's like, first of all, it's not a pinch. There's blood. Hello. So it's not a pinch. And then it is so funny because it'll be like, my favorite is when it's like, are you okay? Like, was that good? And she's like, that was amazing. And then what they do is they fall asleep. And then he wakes up in the middle of the night, just behind her, ready to go again. Yeah. And then she's like, that is amazing. And it's like, it's all not amazing the first night. Like it's just not.
But do you want to read about a amazing first night?
No, I just want there to not be this is the best sex I've ever had. I just don't want us to say that.
Right. You just want to be like, this was fine.
Because it is funny to me that sometimes in some of these books, it'll be like, oh, it's just a pinch. And now she's straight up into BDSM. And it's like, wow, we just went all the way to the other side. And I'm not saying you can't do that. You might unlock some sort of kink immediately, but I do think there's a learning curve, and I know that we don't have enough books to get that all figured out, but I don't need it to be presented as, well, that was amazing. It just has to be like, I feel closer to you now. Like, okay, great. Like,
there's some emotional intimacy here that cannot be denied.
I don't need the minutia of like, hold up, wait a minute, give me a second. Like, I don't need all that necessarily, although sometimes that can be funny if you're in a rom-com, and it can be like, okay, slow your roll. Like, this is I kiss dating goodbye. This is hard. Like,
I do want you to have to read a book that does that, though. Like, if people watch The Wire, season 2 is like David Simon's like middle finger, you're gonna learn about haberdashers. We're not going to visit any of the people you met in season one because you're going to have to be here and you're going to have to do some work. Listen, I want you to read that book of like sex for the first
time. Listen, there is a great book called The Lady Awakened by Cecilia Grant. It's a great historical romance. And her husband dies mysteriously. Okay. And now she's going to be penniless. So she goes to the neighbor and is like, hey, can we stoop until I get pregnant so that I can pretend that I was already pregnant with the heir and then I won't have to lose this house? Mm-hmm. And he's like, I'm on it. But she's never had good sex because she was like, oh, what is that? Oh, is that? Oh, okay. And it does walk through him trying to be, it's funny. It's almost like he's fallen first, which we love, but he's trying to like convince her, no, this can be good. And she's like, just get to business.
Get it done.
Like she's only interested in the transactional nature of it.
Yeah.
And he has to really wear her down with romance, like to make her convince her that it could be good. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like okay.
That's add a good
that
one.
To your TBR, Don.
Yeah, I will. Can't wait. Aaron, what about you? A no fiction.
I just have to do one. I just have one.
That's yeah, all
you
I have.
Can, you
one.
Do as many as you want. You can do as
I'll
many as you want.
Can I do some rapid fires?
Of course.
Okay. Miscommunication. Just friggin' talk to each other. That's all this takes.
Oh, absolutely not. Sometimes it's fun when they
go. No.
It's never fun. Yeah, it is. Never
it's
fun.
Totally fun sometimes.
Talk to each other. Enormously.
Oh, no. I didn't know how you fail. I wish.
We wouldn't have Pride and Prejudice if they talked to each other.
Okay. I will give you that because that is a social moré. Like that's a social thing. Like we don't talk, but in contemporary stuff, I'm like literally just have a conversation with each other.
Yeah.
Enormously complicated magical systems. I don't need like, well, and this also like long drawn out descriptions of landscape, like J.R.R. Tolkien. That's what I'm not interested. Thank you so much.
Into any of that.
No.
Okay.
Short stories. Sorry, Knox.
I don't like short stories.
How dare
I like short stories.
You?
Like, write a whole story.
Write a whole story.
They did. It's just short. Do you hate short people? Or do you think they're worthy of existence too?
No, I just don't like them. And then my last two third act breakups, you can miss me with a third act breakup.
Listen, I love a third act breakup.
No.
Because I gotta get back together.
No.
I love it. I love it.
And then finally, American names for private parts. I only want British colloquialisms for body parts. I want.
Can I have some examples, please?
Yeah, I want the C word instead of the P word. Okay.
Yeah, I want the C word.
I want
the P word.
Knickers instead of underwear or panties. I want arse instead of ass. What are some other ones, Jamie?
Oh, listen. My favorite too is like in historical romance. Instead of the P word, it's the C word, but it's cunny.
Madison, for the love of God, please.
Don't you dare, Madison. That is a lady word.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. So I prefer British nicknames for our.
Oh, like for guys, the C word instead of the D word.
D word. Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. 100%.
The C word instead of the D word.
Instead of.
No. Yeah. Thank you. I'm still getting over. I think. For the ladies, C word over P word, that's kind of a crazy take.
No, it's not. No, it's not. No.
I think you would be surprised how many women don't like the P word.
Gross.
Used I'm not championing the P word. I'm just saying it's not a great option for the C word.
It's not a bad word.
Aaron, say it the way you said it the other day. Say it the way you said it.
How did I say it?
Because you said it like someone you know says it. And you were like, that's why I don't like it.
No.
Do it.
You don't have to say
no,
that.
it's just I don't like it. Just like I can't do it. I cannot do it. It's awful. How is that sexy in any
it's
way?
Not. None of them are sexy. That's the problem.
No.
That's the problem.
Incorrect.
The C word is
awesome.
Sexy. The C word is sexy.
Sorry, I don't want to be that person, but I am. That's just
I don't care honestly about this. Your short story sacrilege.
I know you're so angry with me.
I can't believe you.
Listen, I do think there are some short stories where I go, that was great. But you know what I always think at the end? Wish that was longer. Like, I just wish there was more. I want to know more. And I get why y'all are doing it when you write short stories. I just sometimes, I just was like, but what if it was 100 pages longer?
I got a question. Jamie, sometimes what's the things in between meals that you eat? What are they called?
Snacks.
Do you like them? Do you like snacks? Do you enjoy snacks?
That's different.
But I'd rather
it's not
have,
different.
I'd rather
it's
have
a smaller version of a bigger thing that you don't need, but you sometimes engage with.
Fair. Okay.
But I don't want that mentally. I don't want that literally.
Do you eat snacks?
Yeah, that's
then you do. Then
it's a different medium. We did earlier this month. We did the episode on most anticipated reads of the fall, and I saw that Zadie Smith had a new book, and I was like so pumped because I was like, oh my god, I love Zadie Smith, and it was like short stories.
And I was like, no,
why, why?
And I'm sure they're going to be great, but I was just a little sad because I was like, more. Oh, I want to be immersed.
You don't want more. How much? What do you think social media is? It's like a movie, but not small.
I don't want social media.
But you watch. You're on it. You do it, right?
Right. But that's because I'm addicted to my phone, Knox. That I'm not addicted to a book of collection of stories.
Maybe you should get addicted book of collections.
But I won't be. I won't, and I refuse, and I just want it to be longer.
I think you're being a C and a D right now. the boy versions. And you shouldn't. Ridiculous.
Knox, what are yours? What is your nose of fiction?
To y'all's point, I think 350 pages. That's all you get.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Tell your story in 350 pages. If you need 450, if you need 10 million and 50, you're not doing a good job. You don't need that much time.
Listen, when Alchemized by Sin Lin Yu that came out last month, when somebody showed it, like they got it in the mail and they literally cried while they opened the mail and they opened it and I went, wait, how big is that? And I looked it up and it was over 1,000 pages. And I went,
I mean,
no, ma'am.
Manacled is insanely long.
I know, but I don't want to read 1,000 pages.
I kind of do.
And I don't want to hold a book that's 1,000 pages.
I kind of do.
Oh, no.
When I was reading Catabasis, I'm 50% on that's how you say it. And like, I was like, I think we're probably wrapping up. And I looked and like time left and it was like 9 hours. And I was like, oh my God, I can't do this. I can't. That's another book.
She loves to describe a thing.
Yeah, she does.
She does.
And I don't mind it. I don't mind her describing something.
I didn't for the first 8 hours, but then the last 9 hours, like, right. Let's get to it. It's like, I get it. You're well read and you know a lot of things.
You know these words.
Yeah.
But let's get to the source of the chalk, please. Isles, celebrity authors. You didn't
like authors of fiction, like when a celebrity writes a fiction book, or
no, like if you are an author who's like so sick at what you do that you become a celebrity, cool, great, you earned it. But if you're like you're on The Bachelor or The Bachelorette, and or like you're
you talking about Hannah Brown, she's
I didn't say that name
left and right.
I didn't say that name, but maybe okay, you did. Fair. Reese Witherspoon with Harlan Coben.
What is that?
You didn't write it.
She didn't write it. She's not involved in that at all.
Quit. Why do you need this? You don't need this. You're an American on American soil. You know, everyone loves you.
Just be who you are.
Just be Draper James. Wear your
Why do you have to be this, too?
Life.
Why do you have to have this? Like,
trying to diversify. She's just trying to do other things.
That's great. It's just, it's greedy.
Listen, can I do one more note? Since I didn't know we could do more than one, and I was trying to be a rule follower, that's my theme this month. I'm trying to be a rule follower.
Yeah,
I know,
Jamie the narc over a shelf respect.
But I do want to say, because we haven't talked about book talk yet, and we will in future episodes, we'll talk about book drama and book communities and all of that. But I will say my favorite thing recently has been book talkers who have been like ripping up their books because they don't like how a person feels about a thing. Listen, I don't care what you're even having an opinion about. Listen to me. You already bought that book.
You already bought that book.
And I get it that you think you're like pretty and important. But also the other flip side of it is when people I don't agree with who are like, I mean, I just didn't even know this author felt this way. And I cannot consume this content anymore. And it'll be like, the author is really into green grapes instead of red grapes. And she's like, do you not understand the red grape, infrastructure in Latin America and how important it is. And you're just like, well, please just get off the internet. Like I can't. And again, those are the same people who will earlier go, you know, reading isn't political. Reading is, it's like, no, reading is often political, but like, okay. But now you're mad about the grapes. That's another beef that I have.
That's a good
just
one.
With the community. Anyway.
That's okay. A good one. Okay. That's personal news. Aaron, do you want to read some of these comments for us?
Yes. We have some great comments from our supporters. This first
They're
one
short. Is that going to bother you? Or do you need, should they be longer?
I did not know I was going to offend you in such a dramatic
way.
Why
do you think I've never brought that up?
Golly. All right, this is from Lauren Gassman. Books that go on and on about the social commentary they're making. Yes, we get it. This is feminism, racism, etc. I got it from the back of the book. Yes, your prose on the subject is pretty, but it was 2 pages ago, and I'm sure it will be 3 pages from now. Show me, don't tell me. Chain Gang All-Stars does this beautifully.
God, what a great book. Chain Gang All-Stars. Listen, I agree. I actually genuinely agree with this because I think, who is this for? I just told you books are often political. I believe that. I think reading can be political. But here's the thing. People who are familiar with systemic oppression, we be knowing. We didn't need this book to tell us. And then the people who think we solved everything since we left England, well, they're not going to get your nuanced take in a world named Melandria, where people over 7 feet are outcast. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like, they're just not going to get it. And so I don't understand this immersion in every other page being like, it's because she's a girl. Did you know it was because she's a girl?
It's just like write nonfiction if that's your thing.
Yeah.
And that's fine too. And that's great. But I tend to lean away from books that are very heavily premised on a particular issue, whatever the issue is. I don't care. When it feels like it's going to be about that issue, not really about developing a story or a character, I don't like that. There's the famous, I think it's Richard Price quote about like, the bigger the issue, the smaller you write. Hmm. So like you don't, if you're writing about the horrors of war, you don't write about like all the bad things happening literally in war. You write about the kids' burnt socks on the ground. And I think Chain Gang Ulcers is a great example of that, because the way it's everything going on is implied and built out. And like, it's the subtext. So it doesn't have to be like the super text, and it doesn't have to get exhausting, but you already know it's there and you can feel it. So it does the job capably without getting preachy. And I just love that example. It's so good.
I agree with this, but also I do think a lot of people aren't like, they're not feeling the nuance in everyday life. And so they're like,
oh, I don't think they're going to get it in a book though.
Maybe that's true.
I mean, I don't know. It just always feels like, I don't know that somebody leaves ACOTAR and go, wait, was she oppressed? Like, I just don't think that's what Rebecca Yarros would tell you. That's exactly what she's doing. I'm trying to communicate this, but I think you've got to, a lot of those people, they're reading things called Pumpkin Spice Cafe.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
And I just don't.
Right.
No that's, offense. Mm-hmm. If y'all loved Pumpkin Spice Cafe, that's a real book.
That's a real book?
What's
it's it about?
It's about the Pumpkin Spice Cafe.
Yeah.
That's and it?
That's It's a romance about the cafe.
It's cozy. It's a cozy romance.
It's like books named after, it's like any book named after a Taylor Swift lyric. Like, we get it. You're trying to sell books. Like, you're not, I know that you're not a good writer. I know that.
All right. This next one is from Rebecca McKay. I'm going to try to not be personally offended by this. I hate open-ended endings. The literal Oxford definition of end, a final part of something, especially a period of time, an activity or story. I loved Lonesome Dove, but I was thrown by the end. I called the bookshelf in Thomasville because I thought my copy was missing pages. The book doesn't have to be a happy ending wrapped in a bow, but I do need an ending. This Rebecca, what are you saying?
First of all, Rebecca, why didn't you just Google how many pages is this book? Why are you calling somebody on the phone?
Phone? Yeah, that's
I do
crazy.
Like that. I like that Rebecca's like, I will call Annie B. Jones.
Oh, I'd like to speak to the manager, Annie B. Jones. Mm-hmm. Is she on maternity leave? What's going on? Yeah, I love that energy.
Like, do you guys need like a definitive ending?
Yeah, like what's, I'm interested in what the policy on endings is, because like, I think there it's a spectrum of like how buttoned up you got to be. Mm-hmm. And I need the circle closed in terms of like what you set up for me here and who you set up. So like, I need that loop closed. Now I don't need happily ever after. I don't want that. I'd prefer it to be a little ambiguous. Like the compound, this is not a spoiler, but that book ends the iteration of the story, that they were telling. But then where they go from there, I don't really know. That's what I like. I don't know what's going on after this, but I do. You did promise me an ending, and you gave me an ending to this story that you're telling me.
Yeah, no, I like that. I am a believer in, I think about Jeff Vandermeer's Annihilation. Uh-huh. The book is very vague, and the ending is super vague. Like, you don't know, and you have to wonder. Now, the movie switched that ending and was like, no, it'll be super clear. And I love the movie also. Like, I like how they chose to interpret that. But it's like Inception. My favorite thing about the movie Inception is that totem still spinning?
Is it going? What like, does it mean?
Was he there? Was he with the kids? And I think it's open to your experience. But I know lots of people who, and many of them are Enneagram nines, who will tell me when a book is vague and it's ending or it doesn't have clarity, it makes them one star the book, like across the board, because they're
psychotic.
Like, that's not what I wanted. And I love a happily ever after, but not in every type of reading experience. Like in a romance, that's actually required. You can't have a romance book without an HEA, but like But I don't need to know. Let me tell you what I don't need is an epilogue about their babies that they had. I don't care about their babies. I don't care about their children.
Harry, the powerful wizard, became a cop.
Listen, I don't care about Scorpius. Get the F out. I don't care about your dumb blonde baby. I don't care about it. I don't care.
See, I think of the breakup as the perfect movie ending because.
Oh, yeah.
They close the loop on the version of them in the story, but then they end it in a way where you're like, I don't know what will happen now, but you do. Like the totem is still spinning because he's still in Inception.
How do you know? You don't know that.
Because I'm an adult and I can use my brain.
It goes to fall and it cuts to black. How do you know?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. I can use my brain. Because he chooses to be stuck in infinite jail with Marine Cotillard, which get it. I understand.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Everything that's like a vague ending, it's not unless you're a baby and you don't want to interpret.
Stop it.
The author gives you the skills to be like, I'm not going to put it on a platter, but if you just try, you can understand what this is. Aaron, what's your policy on endings?
I don't mind. I like it when it's a little ambiguous. I like it when it's like, and I kind of think I fall under the Knox rule here, which is like, just give me like, you know, era closure of this part of your life or this part of the plot of your life or whatever it is. And yeah you're still going to live, whatever. You're still going to have more things happen. But I need what you promised in this story to at least give me some kind of closure.
And listen, if you want to find out what happened to Elizabeth Bennet and Mr. Darcy, there's fanfic for that.
There's so much fanfic for
you
that.
You can find out what happened. Yeah.
Okay, this is from Sarah Bessie. One of my consistent pet peeves is best described as, quote, men who clearly know nothing about women attempt to write about women without being weird about it and then fail spectacularly. What a, quote unquote, joy to encounter such stellar prose while reading. And she has an excellent link to a Bored Panda website where it gives excellent examples. We'll put it in the show notes. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this one... It reminds me of that part in 40-Year-Old Virgin when Steve Carell is like, yes, a breast feels like a bag of sand. Everybody knows that. That's normal. 100%.
Very relatable.
Yeah. Or, you know, like leading with their rack. That's also a, like, you know, hurt. She came down and her nipples were pert. Like, it's like, okay, great.
Her undulating breastises bounced gleefully.
Exactly. Can I read one of the Bored Panda examples? It said, if women wrote about men the way men write about women, quote, he sighed, his medium-sized balls bobbing in his jeans like buoys in a sea of denim, rising and falling with his breath. They were not the firm, boisterous nuts of a young man. He lamented this as much as the years lost. Always bosom forward. Why is it always bosom
it is.
Forward?
Always bosom forward.
Because women are defined by their breasts. You guys don't know that. No.
Listen, I do think people can be really great writers. Like men. I think they can write. Jay says, "Here's a spicy take. I do think that men can write. I don't read
very
a lot
charitable.
Of their work.
Thank you.
But, but I do think men can write. But in the same way that Christopher Nolan is literally one of the best filmmakers of this generation, who also cannot." Under any circumstance, write a woman. He does not know how to write a woman in a movie. And I get it. Like, and he's like, I don't want to try. And that's okay. Like, that's a choice. And like Lord of the Rings, they were like, we don't even need ladies. No. We'll have these two.
In fact, we'll take one of them and we'll have her say, I am no man. That's all she said.
And that's all she can say to say. So I get it. Like, I do prefer. And also, like, it depends on the genre. Like, I sometimes do want what feels like a male perspective on minutiae and details and landscapes and all the world building and all of that, that I like that. But then, you know, I'm never going to read a cis romance written by a man. I'm never going to do it.
I don't really know if I
never.
Can
yeah.
Think never. Are like, is that something that happens?
No, it is like, and I do think there are men who can do it well. It's just not, I find, it's not going to be from the perspective that I'm interested in. They're not writing the male characters from a female gaze because they don't fully understand the female gaze. And that doesn't make them the weaker sex. It just makes them, this is a blind spot. That's my own personal opinion. Knox, as the man, what do you think about all of this?
I'm very much in the camp of like, anyone can write anything. Anyone can write any perspective. Any point of view, worldview, ethnicity, gender, sexuality, like anyone can do that. Not everybody can do it well. But I don't ever want to be in a place where it's like, you can only write like from your perspective and your worldview. Cause I feel like that gets really, and I'm not saying you're saying that, Jamie.
No, I'm saying you can write it. I'm not going to buy it. Like
you're not interested.
Yeah. I'm not interested in it. Yeah.
100%.
It's not for you.
I think, it doesn't mean everybody can write it well. And I think the problem is like how authors write characters, especially how, straight white dude authors write women. Obviously, it usually is either in a poor depiction that, like subconsciously reinforces the female or the male gaze, or, it's unfortunately reinforcing like cultural blind spots. And that's usually like where you see it pop up. But I do think, I would be remiss if I said, I don't know that all ladies can write guys either.
That's fair.
Oh, 100%. No, 100%.
Sometimes like you're, I remember reading the throwback special. I think it was a throwback special. Actually, that might not be the right book. But I remember reading story about a group of guys and be like, I've never seen an experience like where men interact like this. And, you know, I don't expect people to nail that, but I feel like female writers usually are writing guys that are like so emotionally intelligent and attuned and introspective, or they're like a charcoal lump of testosterone hung like an elephant. And that's the only guys that exist in the world. And it's like, well, there's some nuance there.
No. And I think it's the reason I like romance written by women is because like those are fictional men and I also know the difference between a fictional man and a real man. And I don't need my real men to be Reese from ACOTAR. Like, I don't need that either. And I just like that version. Let me read you another from the Bored Panda. I want to see if you can guess what this book is from. While she was still very young, a strong, able man whose face she never saw took her by surprise, threw her down on the jetty, ripped her clothes off, and made instantaneous and frenetic love to her. Lying there on the rocks, her body covered with cuts and bruises, she had wanted that man to stay forever so that she could die of love in his arms.
What?
That would be love.
Give him a moose a muffin.
That would be Love in the Time of Cholera by Gabriel Garcia Marquez.
Wow. Okay.
That's so tough. Funny. That is tough.
Like, that's a tough one.
I would be interested I'd be interested what you thought about Colton Gentry.
I did read that book because you recommended it. And then you had greenlit it. So many people loved it. And so then I was like, okay, I'll read it. And it was excellent. It was excellent. So I do think it can be done, but my default
is rarity. You're right.
But it's not my default. Plus, I don't think a lot of men are writing romances. Like, and listen, Colton Gentry was sweet enough to come into our Shelf Respect Instagram and be so kind and like comment and interact with our followers. And so I'm so grateful for that. But I don't know that if I want to read books written by men, there's so many more that I could, you know, and I just don't know that in that particular genre, am I going to commit to that? But I don't think it's all genres across the board.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
I don't. Yeah.
That's Colton Gentry's third act by Jeff Zentner is the author. I can remember who that was.
Okay. So our next one is Jackie Young, Books That Missed the Editing Cycle. If you have typos, words that are overused, or bad grammar, then I will DNF. This includes plot holes and complications that clearly would have been resolved if someone read the book before it went to print.
I love that there's a typo in this comment.
I know. That's my favorite part.
It's tough. I'm so sorry, Jackie. Like, it was tough. You could have caught it and deleted it and redone it, but alas.
Yeah.
But it happens before, to us all.
It's tough. It's tough out there. Imagine a whole book of your comments and like how difficult that is, you know? Listen, I think it's a consequence of the industry. I mean, it's the author's fault. Like, if they're self-publishing, obviously that's on the author. If they're not, sometimes you get a good editor, sometimes you don't. And I've had friends who have had like written entire drafts and only got like literally two notes.
Which is absurd.
Which you are wanting notes. You are wanting people to be like, did you realize that you misnamed this character or you didn't bring this back or you're referring to something that doesn't exist anymore. You need that kind of aspect. But I don't know. I mean, obviously it's been a minute since I wrote a book, but it was a little tumultuous back then. So Aaron, I don't know if like yours was a lot better.
I mean, it was, I had a great experience, but I also know people who like will turn in, you know, 65,000 word, you know, documents and they'll get five notes back, which is unhinged. Like that's, and then you feel like the onus is on you to go through. And but that's not your job. Your job is to create and then to and it's this like symbiotic relationship kind of with your editor. But I mean, and I do think like, I mean, I saw that Jen Hatmaker this week, her last name is misspelled on the spine of her book, which is that's
insane.
That's insane. That's like, tough. That's so crazy. And I would not be a good editor. I'm not a good editor because I don't have attention to detail. And I feel like that's a very special gift. But man, that would be a tough one.
Listen, my examples of this are I dated a guy and every guy I've ever known has loved No Country for Old Men. It's their favorite thing.
Great movie,
and
great book.
That's right. And so he was like, I really want you to read the book. And I had not seen the movie. I've actually still not seen the movie. I can't, I think there's one of them. What's the other
you're
one?
You're going to see in
December. There Will Be Blood is what you're thinking.
There's one. Okay. I've seen one of them.
You've seen Daniel Day-Lewis or Javier Bardem with Dorothy Hamilton.
I drink your milkshake. That's
no, actually, I've seen neither of those. I just know them like through culture.
Did you just gaslight us on your own story?
Yeah.
You really did?
Okay. Just gatekeep girl boss gaslit us. Like
the guy
was
like, let's read No Country for Old Men together, which I actually like that in a guy. Like, let's read something together because he also read Quicksilver with me, which was great.
That's cute.
I have a question. Like one book and you're sitting together?
No. Just we're reading it and we're trying to get to like each week. He was like, okay, let's try to read, which I'm going to read the whole thing. I'm like, I can't read it like over a week. Well, I'm going to sit down and read it. Like, I don't know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. As soon as I started, I was like, oh no, I can't read this. And he was like, why? Because I said, there's no quotation marks.
That's wild.
I was like, why? And he was like, no, that's important for the book.
It's not.
Like, no, it's important to have quotation marks. It's like, I need the beginning of sentences to be capitalized. Like, I know that that's a vibe, and I know that the author is trying to commute something. E.E. Cummings, I know you're trying to say something, but I need it to look a certain way. I'm a little, but I also speed read, so I need the quotation marks because that's where I read to. I'm not reading in
See, between. That's, I'm like, I wonder
that's
if.
So unhinged, Jamie. Like, that is so unhinged.
I know, I haven't revealed that yet to Shelf Respect.
Is that like, I need the quotations because I want to skate through this?
Yeah.
Or is it like, as the author, I'm not using quotations so I can intentionally slow you down. That's also annoying. You know what I mean?
Right. And I get it. Like whoever, Cormac, good for you. Like, you've earned the right.
He's dead now. So,
okay. Well, that's fair. But then the other two examples are different kinds of editing. So Stephen King's It is, to me, the worst Stephen King book. And he has bad books. But here's why. It is a fantastic, Pennywise is an amazing character, one of the best villains of all time. I do love the book. It's told in two time periods. A couple things. It's 1,200 pages. So that goes
to 900 too many.
That's one book. That's 1,200 pages. And the other thing about, he's so repetitive. You can, and I was like, did he write this book third? No, it was like 22nd. And I went, oh, so they just had said, well, he can do what he wants.
Yeah.
He's writing so much and he's making us so much money. We don't have to. So it felt like he got three notes back. And I was like, yeah, he already said this whole paragraph. And it's not like a callback in a cool way. It just feels like he didn't remember that he said it. Or he didn't remember who he was talking to in Boxer. So he told the story twice. Like that's what it felt like. And then finally, of course, it's 50 Shades of Grey. Because I can remember clearly reading a scene, a BDSM scene, where I was like, wait, is she kneeling? But I thought she was, I thought her legs were tied up in the air. But how is she getting there? And then I was like, no, someone's going to. And I immediately went to the Reddit and was like, to see if anybody was talking about it. Everybody was talking about it. They're like, this can't even make, this doesn't even make physical sense. This is not physically possible.
It's like JFK's magic bullet theory. You're on the whiteboard.
Yes. So I don't think anybody was like, yeah, we need to really do a tight edit. Because I do think an editor was like, I don't know. Like, there seems to be handcuffs. I don't know how she's going down on him. I don't know how it's happening. But no matter.
Like, so in my experience, the acquiring editor on my book took maternity leave as soon as like I signed the deal. And then for my second book, she left the company altogether. She just was, I am gone. So that was tough. But the person I was working with closely, her name is Megan Porter. She was incredible. And she's the version. She's exactly what you're talking about. It's like, hey, you used a colon when you should have used a different punctuation. But she's also like, what you're saying here physically doesn't make sense.
Yes.
So you need to rewrite it. And that's the dream.
I want to be told, like, do not let me look like an idiot, please.
Yeah.
I'm begging you. That's the vibe from it. Okay. This is from Elise Miller. Especially in romance, billionaires or CEOs who essentially stop working when they start sleeping with the FMC. Like they magically no longer have to work 18-hour days with no impact to their company once they fall in love.
Listen, what you want?
It's a great point.
What you want?
I want Slack noises in the background of our BDSM. Yeah, hold on. Someone's doing a huddle. Just do yourself and I'll be right back. Let's go. Boop, boop,
boop. What is that? But isn't that the reason that they can stop working is because they're a billionaire?
Yeah, like, this idea that you think billionaires work?
No.
You think Jeff Bezos clocks in a 9 to 5 every day?
No, but you're asking, this is a great point, at least, because you're asking someone who has built this like monolithic company and has a room, a wing of their house dedicated to sex efficiency. Now they're also just like, what do you want to do? You want to do a shopping montage? Let's do it. I got a call here with the lawyer and the accountant. But
you have more time on your hands because you're not doing any of your chores.
You know why they become billionaire? Because they're not like, I'm billionaire. Got it. Good. No more work for me. They're like, no, I want trillionaire.
No,
I want quadrillionaire.
That's the two of you. Listen, we have 3 podcasts and we would have 5 if we're up to the 2 of you. We'd have 5. This thing would be a TV show that y'all be like, let's pitch it. Let's fly to LA. And I'm always like, but are you tired? Are you tired? Let's work less.
We have to run away from things. In our lives,
I get
okay?
It. It's fair. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Let no, but live. I like more billionaire romances, but with like the impingement of their day to day. I love
yeah,
that.
Let's, I
where they're like,
that.
Hey, did you pack me lunch? Like yeah. After I went down on you last night, you could at yeah. least pack me a lunch.
He's like, we can smash, but no talking because yeah. I am on a conference call.
I am on a conference call.
You cannot make a noise.
100%. Now that is hot. Like that is hot.
See, that's
if there's
cool.
like a Zoom
yeah.
going on and then other things are going on, I'm into that.
He's a little distracted, you know? Yeah. He's like, holy shirts and pants, like stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, this is from Katie Dawson. The New York Times bestseller list is based on vibes? Whose vibes? Well, the New York Times has an algorithm they use taking into account a bunch of different components. But those components can include things like paying the New York Times, working for the New York Times, and being famous.
Okay, so lists are fun. So there are lots of, here's the hard part. We're friends with lots of authors. There are 2 authors on this podcast. Mm-hmm. I want everyone to be a best-selling author. But when people say in their bio that they're a best-selling author, that is a mystery because it can mean a million things, okay? Mm-hmm. It can mean New York Times, and only the people who are a New York Times bestseller will say 2 times New York Times bestseller,
yeah.
Which is great, but it's not based on sales. It's not based on sales. And so New York Times is very clear. Tim Ferriss wrote about this years ago, and it's a trade secret. And in 1983, there was a legal case in which the Times was sued because it was like, hey, we sold the most books according to USA Today. Why did we not make the list? Because this is not, and they were like, oh, this is not math. This is editorial. We decide as a group, and they won that. The New York Times won that case because they're like, that's not what this list is. But the problem is the average reader doesn't know that.
Right.
That they think, oh, well, if the most people loved this book, then I'm going to keep reading this book.
They don't know that the little cross next to your book means that your publisher bought those back, and that's why there are so many sales.
Oh, yeah, so dang. The dagger, if you see on the New York Times list a little dagger, it means that there was a bulk purchase of some sort. And listen, a lot of people manipulate that system. Obviously, you know, Rachel Hollis infamously paid $50,000 to be on that front table at Barnes & Noble. That front table isn't just curated by a guy named Liam who
staff picks.
It's, you know yeah. what I mean? Like that, you have to pay to the publisher or the author has to pay to be on some of those tables that are front and center. And so it's capitalism, you guys. It's not art. Like it's not.
Can I just say, it's such tiny pee-pee energy to sue the New York Times for not putting you on their
right.
list.
Right, no, it is. 100%. 100%.
It's petty, and
now,
I'm like,
now,
yeah,
USA Today and Publishers Weekly list, they are based on sales.
Yeah.
But again, remember that some weeks, a book that sells 3,000 copies could end up on a bestseller list, which is amazing, right? Because 3,000 copies is a lot of books.
Yep.
That's a lot of people reading a lot of, I mean, that's a lot of people in a mega church on a Sunday, that's a lot, right? Mm-hmm. So 3,000 people buying a book is impressive. But you can have another week where 9,000 books were sold, but because maybe it was during Black Square Week and all the focus got on other books, rightfully so, but maybe just the timing of, you know, whatever happened, then suddenly you sold 9,000 copies and you don't make any list. because you're Knox. And so like, and that is frustrating. That's frustrating, yeah, because there is a lot tied into the prestige. If you make the New York Times list once, you are much more likely to make it the next time, even if you sell significantly less books. I know that firsthand with data. Like, so that's the hard part too, is like, you want, if you're an author, like, and there's so much pressure, you
there's
know?
So much pressure. And like, even if you hit a list, and the like the next book, they're like, we're going to put, you know, best-selling author on the cover. And it's like, you don't want to put like USA Today best-selling author. Like, it's not as prestigious.
Right. I did see somebody put Amazon bestseller. And I'm like, girl, that's a list updated by the hour. You need to calm down. Right?
Everybody is.
You need to calm down. Like, I get it. But it's also, so if you ever want to see like how many books are people really selling in a week, you just go to, you can go to Publishers Weekly, and it shows the number of books that sold. And you'd actually be surprised, because the other thing is people are getting book deals because they have 5 million followers, right? So let's say, Sadie Robertson Huff, okay, wrote a
hypothetically,
and say she wrote a book because, and she got a book deal because she has millions of followers. And then the first week her book came out, she sold less than 5,000 copies.
Allegedly.
Yeah. And so nobody in that community was willing to buy her book. But that's, it's so, but she can now add best-selling author. But like, to what end? Like, not like these people.
Mommy's best-selling author. You know, we don't know where.
I'm sorry. Duck's best-selling author. Okay. Get it right. But
this might be a hot take though. I like it. I'm glad. I like that it's vibes based.
You like that it's vibes.
So that other people can get featured that might not
even
sell
though
as many books.
I did get punked by it a little bit.
Yeah, right.
I like that it, because I feel like if it's not mysteriously vibesy, it can get gamified, or it can get like brute force mathematically overcome. And then it's like, Eric Trump is a 16-time New York Times bestselling author. I don't know about that, you know. So,
and the thing about that dagger, so that's why they added the dagger, because people were so critical. They're like, well, how do we know if, because politicians were infamous of when they would write a book, and this was across the aisle, they would write a book and then their publisher would buy, like, or their nonprofit, whatever that is, or would buy 50,000 copies of that book.
Yeah.
I literally went to a church where the church, the pastor had a book come out, and the church bought enough copies for every campus to be able to pay whatever the trade cost was. So like, they didn't make any profit off of selling the book in the, you know, lobby, but they bought enough books for this 40,000 member church to all that. Well, guess who was a New York Times bestseller, but got a dagger because
thanks to your tithes and offerings.
That's right.
You may pick up a book in the lobby.
And here's the comedy. The dagger never goes away. So even if you stay on that list for years, like James Clear for Atomic Habits, he's been on that list for years. He has sold millions of copies of that book. That dagger has never gone away, because the first week he did a bulk purchase to move books, and his publisher and them in joint. And he says he regrets it, because he's like, and now I'm always questioned about, am I still doing the bulk buys, which he's not. People are just wanting to stack their habits. And so
I think I love the dagger. I don't think it's enough. Because
You think
I didn't even
else.
Know that. Like, I've just learned that. So I think it's a different color, or it's Comic Sans. Your titles.
I like Comic Sans.
I like Comic Sans.
You know what I mean?
That's perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you see this? Atomic Habits in Comic Sans forever.
Yeah. Let me tell you. You see Lethem in by Mel Robbins in Comic Sans. And you're like, oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
That was weird.
Title in Comic Sans, subtitle in Wingdings. And I'm like, oh, got it. I understand what happened here.
Nailed it.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay. This is from Lynn Shalock. You know what? It's a love triangle for me. Make up your mind. Let's get on with the interesting plot.
Yes. Preach, Lynn. Preach with your mouth. Say it with your chest.
I do hate this. I do hate a love triangle. Yes.
Listen, you just said I had the right why choose. Because why choose?
No, we can I don't have like it.
Because you always choose.
I can have it all.
No. My problem is, in a love triangle, there's always the one who's not going to be the... there's always the one like in a threesome who's rubbing both people's backs, and it's like, we all know who it is. So why are you wasting my time acting like maybe Bella's gonna go with the Teen Wolf? We know. You're just wasting time for me.
Yeah,
you know?
Listen, now I'm not interested in a love triangle if it's like a straight love triangle. Well, actually, I don't care. Like, I like MFM and I like MMF. But I is don't it, want...
What's the difference between that?
So MFM is means both boys like the girl.
Okay.
Oh,
but that's MMF, Twilight. That's right. But MMF means both boys like the girl and the boys like each other.
Okay.
My boyfriends have boyfriends.
That is... Yeah. And listen,
I love it.
I... Great for you. That is... That puts a layer of plot that is very confusing to me.
Y'all are burdened by monogamy. Don't be burdened by monogamy. Sorry. Forgive me.
I love it. I embrace it.
I apologize.
All right. This is from Hannah Meyer. As someone with a BA in English, I've had to contend with what used to be a romanticization of my former syllabi to a deep humiliation that we were given so much Fitzgerald, Hemingway, Twain, Melville, etc. I spent way too much of my youth trying to analyze and interpret and relate to these white men's thoughts and feeling shrouded in bullfights and green lights and sperm whales and acting like I cared because it was, quote, classical literature. So honestly, maybe this is a note of white dude fiction authors and their, quote, American dream. And how much it influenced what fiction we were forced to read in school. The world is so much bigger than you, F. Scott. Ugh.
Listen, I don't think it's... I'm going to make a case for white dudes real quick. So,
thank you. Writer. Somebody had to.
So I don't think that it's that you should say no to white dude authors and their American dream. I think you should say no to publishers who don't publish diversely. Hmm. And that's what was happening is that, I'm sorry, when people don't have the right to vote, they're not going to give them book deals.
No.
You know what I mean? And so, like, so the problem is there is all this great, rich, beautiful literary history with a lot of great writers, but the problem is they just weren't, it's like when you go to the Louvre. When you go to the Louvre, it's like a Where's Waldo for any people of color in art. You know, like you're just like, is there a black person in here? There's not. And because there just weren't artists, weren't revered for that work, which was wrong. And also, like, how can we still try to find a way to love Ernest Hemingway? Now, listen, is The Sun Also Rises one of the most boring books that's ever been written? Yes, obviously. But no, also,
I read a little bit of Poldark. That's pretty bad.
How dare you? How dare you?
Yeah.
So I just don't think we have to throw out the baby with the bathwater because the bathwater was bad. And maybe some authors got some book deals that they shouldn't have. And the funny thing is, I always say if a woman was published in the 1800s, she's a great writer. Like, there's no way that a woman would have gotten published in the 1800s without being a great writer, you know?
Yeah.
No matter how you feel about what we learned is, what'd you call it? Wuthering Heights? Werther's Heights?
Werther's Original Heights?
Original Heights, yeah.
I would say, too, like, I think the American dream kind of idea, I get it's annoying, but it makes a lot of sense as to why you got a lot of it, because it kind of dovetails nicely with story and with compelling story, like with possibility and transformation. So especially for American writers, like you're getting heavy doses of that because it is very compelling, but also at the same time, like if you're in Russia and you're reading Tolstoy or Dostoevsky, it's not like the American dream, what you can become and achieve and transform into, that's interesting and kind of fun.
Yeah.
Tolstoy and Dostoevsky is like, what can you endure and the oppression God? And like, that's it. That's not fun. In France, like you're reading Sartre and Camus and can't really even understand it because it's existentialism and the absurdity of like just being a person in the world. So that's kind of messed up. And then, you know, in Great Britain, if you're reading like Dickens or even Jane Austen, you're reading about like the price of empire, the burden of empire, the burden of high society and expectations. And those are all very suffocating, not fun premises to read. So I think part of it, everything Jamie is saying, yes. Also, the American dream is more fun than those premises to read and to spend time with. But also it's just better storytelling. So you're going to get a lot of that anyways. But yeah, I mean, you know, we need more stories that are not like whales as...
Let's go find the sperm whale.
Metaphors for your pee-pee.
Yeah.
Bullfighting as metaphor for overcoming your pee-pee. All that stuff. Like, we can do better.
Just no more metaphors about pee-pee.
Yeah.
Aaron, your thoughts on white dudes?
I land where the two of you land. I don't think it's the problem. I think it's just, let's mix in a salad every once in a while. Like, we don't need to have a steak every meal.
Yeah.
They're great, but do we need that for our heart health? Probably not. So I really hate Moby Dick, like really hate it.
It's tough.
It's so, I cannot understand why we're still doing this, but I think, yes, like don't throw it's good. There's some good stuff in there. Don't throw that out. Just add something, you know, add something else. It's like with Lent. Like, yeah, you're giving something up, but maybe add something as well.
Well, and you know, after 2020, the New York Times did a piece about like how much fiction is actually, you know, do we need more writers of color? Do we? And so New York Times investigated and they found
investigation idea.
And they found the premise.
I know. And then they found that American fiction published between 1950 and 2018, 95% of those books were written by white authors.
Wow.
And that's a lot. And so it's tough because, again, the hard part too is when you're dealing with capitalism, I'm going to be honest. I see white women on the internet be so weird about, they're like, well, I mean, but like, he's not black. Like, he's tawny about like a romantasy character. And it's like, well, why can't he be black? Like, can he just be black? Could he be anything? Like, does it matter? Like, who cares? But people are weird about, like, I know people who, when they read books, if they don't have a specific person in mind, we never talked about this, but like, when people cast books, I always go, but why? I don't picture anybody when I read a book. They're always like a vague, faceless thing.
What?
I don't picture like a specific face. Like, even if they're describing it to me, I'm not like putting a placeholder in there. I'm not putting a celebrity in there or like someone
I know.
You just
imagine a bunch of ghosts, like ethereal hazes.
You don't have a movie in your mind?
Never. No.
What? How do you imagine sex scenes? Just like mists penetrating each other?
I don't know if I'm just like, no, I'm here. Like, what?
This is insane.
I know.
This is the craziest thing I've ever heard. People are
like, what that is happening in your head?
I mean, I'm like picturing, like, I was just reading a book, The Jassad Heir, the duology, and I loved it. And when they were in the woods, I was like, okay, they're in the woods. But I just kind of pictured just trees. I didn't just like trees. Go into the detail of the woods she was describing.
Are you like, is it from your POV? Like, you're the main character and you're like, this is for, it's like,
no, I'm a voyeur. I'm watching. Yeah. I'm like,
there's
a vague
nobody
lady
to watch.
Well, she's just a vague lady. I'm not like picturing like, oh, it's Lily Reinhart walking through the Stanford campus. I'm not picturing Lily Reinhart. I'm just being like, there's a vague person walking through campus. I don't
Why
know.
Do you need quotations if you're just imagining mists of air talking to each other?
Quotations, because I'm speed reading and the quotations know where to read. That's how I know when to start reading again. But yeah,
it's so crazy.
Like, but I know that not everybody's like that. But like, when you picture, if you make, because I've seen some people make cast list, I'm like, oh, so you're only into white people in your books when you cast your book. And is that bad? Is like, I think it's like, it's not interesting. I don't know that it's got a moral value, but to me, it's just not interesting. But that's again why, like, that's why you just, the problem is we're not going to have classics. It's like when you talk about classics, it's hard because there's just not a lot of choices because they weren't getting published at all.
Yeah.
And that's still till 2018.
There was no opportunity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would like to know from the listeners, like, do you imagine mists penetrating one another, or do you have a movie in your brain?
Do not sleep on mist penetrating each other.
No. I think you have a whole new romance genre that you need to explore. 100%. All right. This is our last one. This is from Dot Knows. Cookbooks are the worst piece of fiction I've ever read. The pictures are more fantastical than romantasy, and the descriptions lead me to think this will just take 30 minutes, only to end up eating dinner at 11:30. This is real. This is
flawless.
Honestly,
I have no notes.
Incredible.
On this
was a great comment. I have never met a timeline in a recipe that is accurate.
No.
And it's because this is what I think. I think the people writing these recipes are excellent cooks. Mm-hmm. And they know how to do everything fast and quick and easy. It's like when you watch anybody do a home tutorial, like on TikTok or YouTube, or like even on like HGTV, you're just like, oh, that seems so fast. And it is fast for them because this is what they do all day, every day.
Also, I feel like their kitchens are not set up like mine. And so it's like, I got to go over here to get the onion, and then I got to go to the other side and get the knife. And then it takes so long.
And nobody,
there's six Amazon boxes on my island. I got to get around. I got to do some of that.
Who is putting every ingredient in a ramekin on the counter to be like, now I'll toss that in, and now I'll toss that in? So the picture.
Oh, I'd love to be that person.
I would love to be that person. I'm not that person.
But you're not that person. Why are you going to dirty all those dishes? I can't dirty all those dishes.
Put the little spices in one little ramekin, right?
I love it.
I don't like any
I love
of that.
The order of that, but like living in the aftermath of that order, I'm like, I couldn't face that.
Listen, I will say that the worst cookbooks are the ones without photos for their recipe. I'm like, first of all, how am I supposed to even know what this is maybe going to look like?
Yeah, I do need to know that.
Everyone's like, a visual learner, and you have elected to not engage with that.
If you're going to do pictures for 80% of these, you need to go all the way to 20%. Although I did learn from a friend who wrote a cookbook that she had to pay for the photos. The publisher did not pay for the photos in the book.
What?
Yeah.
Come on, publisher.
So she had to pay for the photos in the book and the styling and all of that.
It's just being like, we're going to give you a book deal, but you're going to have to pay for the pages.
Well, it's like giving you a book deal and they're like, but you're going to have to market it. Oh, wait, they do that.
Oh, that's the whole
apparatus. That is actually how publishing works.
Interesting. I don't like when cookbooks, they'll do like, or even just like a recipe, they'll be like, they'll use, not even like the metric system. They'll just be like, add a little skizzerp of butter.
Yeah.
And I'll be like,
what's I don't know what the
is that slang? How many milliliters
or
is that?
Or add to taste. How dare you?
No. Add to taste. That's what you're for.
That's what you're for. You know what? I don't know what my taste is.
That's like going to one of those places where you can cook your own meat at a big grill.
No.
I'm like, no, that's why I go out is so I don't have to do this. I don't know what's supposed to taste good. I don't know what spices to put on this. This is ridiculous. Yeah,
that's why I pay you to do that for me because I'm dumb.
Grill crap. Get that out of here. That's
Genghis. I remember. I don't know if they're still around. We used to hit those up. You just point at meat and potatoes.
Just
and
they raw put it in meat the thing for you. Just like here's some raw meat. You want to season it yourself? No, I don't actually. That's not why I'm here. I'm gonna go to Tzatziki's now.
Okay, that's gonna do it for this episode of Shelf Respect.
If you enjoyed this episode, you can hear even more exclusive content for our hardbacks tier at patreon.com/shelfrespect. Use code Bated Breath now through February 28th to save 90% on your first month of hardbacks. It's only 70 cents. The link is in the show notes.
I'm Jamie Golden. You can find me on the internet at Jamie B. Golden.
I'm Marian Moon. You can find me on the interwebs at Erin H. Moon.
I'm Knox McCoy. You can find me on the socials at Knox McCoy. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye, guys.
See you.